This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
On Keeping the Faith this week, we're talking by phone with the National Director of the Funeral Consumers Association Alliance, Joshua Slocum. Josh, can you hear me all right?
Hi, Steve. Yes.
Great. Good to have you. Now, where are you as we're talking to you by phone?
I am in my home office in Montpelier, Vermont, the smallest state capital in the country.
In Vermont. And you probably have a beautiful view. Is it raining or snowing there?
Earlier today, it was threatening to snow a little bit, but we're actually getting a bit of sun through the clouds. We're desperately waiting for spring.
Okay. We've had some warmer weather, but today it got colder, and it's snowing a little bit earlier today.
Well, let's get off this unpleasant topic and into something more fun like funerals.
That's right. Josh, we're going to have to call you back because the sound is pretty bad. So if you'll hang up, we'll call back and try to get a better connection.
Very good.
All right. And in the meantime, let me read a little poem. This is National Poetry Week, or National Poetry Month here in this country. My brother sent me a poem today via computer. Because I'd told him what our weather was like here in Illinois. This is my brother Joel, who is a writer and reads a lot, and he's a librarian in a school in Iowa City. And here's an 8-word poem that he wrote about the weather here in central Illinois today, this part of April. So this is called April in Illinois. Birds are singing. 5 kites fly. Snow falls. April in Illinois, a poem written by my brother and read on the air with his permission. Joel Shoemaker, school librarian. And we're trying to get our guest today back on the phone. We had a bad connection the first time we tried with a lot of echo, so we'll see how it works on a second try. Again, we're talking with Joshua Slocum, who's the National Director of the Funeral Consumers Alliance. We're talking with him by phone from Vermont, and he's going to be visiting this community, Champaign-Urbana, in a couple weeks. He'll be speaking Monday, April 28 at 7 p.m. at Provena Covenant Hospital Auditorium. Provena Covenant Hospital is on Park Street, 1400 West Park, Urbana, right just before you get to the dividing line between Wright Street between Champaign and Urbana. And he will be speaking in person at the annual meeting of the local Funeral Consumers Alliance. Josh, we're still trying to find him again. At any rate, he'll be speaking that night. It starts at 7 o'clock. It's a free meeting. And there'll be a very short business meeting, literally just a couple sentences. And then we'll be proceeding to hear him talk about what you don't know can cost you. Current trends in the funeral industry. The Funeral Consumers Alliance looks at all parts of the funeral industry, looks at cemeteries, looks at rules different states have for vaults and cremations and all those things. And our local group, of which I'm currently the vice president, although my term is about to run out with this annual meeting, we look at what the various funeral homes in this area charge for various services, trying to give people who, at a time of grief, are trying to make decisions and often either don't have the time or the energy, or the emotional energy at least, to shop around much, to know what the various options are. So our group publishes a newsletter, and it's free for anybody that wants it. If you want to make a donation, that's great. We all are volunteers who work with this group. There are several pastors. In the past, we've had priests and rabbis, and as well as just people who are concerned about being efficient and yet provide the right atmosphere for people who are looking for a service. I just was passed a note that it'll take about 2 or 3 minutes to solve the technical problems. Our engineers are working on this right now. And so let me read another poem. Here's one about a funeral. This was, I think, the first funeral that I ever attended. It was of my paternal grandmother, Inez Moore Shoemaker, back in 1962. I was in college up at Wheaton and came back to Champaign-Urbana for her funeral service. She died a bit unexpectedly at age 65. So this was something I wrote while I was in college. I still think it has a little bit of merit. So let me read this poem, and then we'll see if we have connected successfully with our guest today. This is called After the Service, and of course it's referring to a funeral service. We hear the fountain of mud and melted snow under us and see it on both sides and in front and behind. The single closed door leads our bright-eyed file to the other door, which opens for her now and for us tomorrow. The circus tent, its hem hid by varicolored flowers, hides the barker from view as he tells us of the wondrous things in store for us inside. And the pretty black heels grate over mother as grandma heels follow tears over baby Martha Ann. So mother and baby Martha Ann are printed in caps to indicate that those are markers on graves, stones embedded in the earth that people are walking over to get to the service for the person who had just died, which in that case was my grandmother. So that's a poem that I wrote back in college after the funeral service. I understand we might have Joshua Slocum back on the air. Are you there?
Here. Is the sound any better?
Much better. That's perfect.
Great. Sorry about that.
That's no problem. I'm happy that our engineer could solve that problem. Well, I've introduced you. I've told a little bit about you and the fact you're going to be speaking in this community on Monday the 28th at 7 p.m. at Provena Covenant Hospital on what you don't know can cost you, current trends in the funeral industry. Tell us how you got interested, to start with, in the whole, all the things connected with death and dying and funerals.
Well, before I came to Funeral Consumers Alliance, I was a newspaper reporter at a daily newspaper in Central Virginia, and I was looking for what they call a weekend story. I was the comps and crime reporter, which meant that I was on the desk at night with scanner and covering all the crime, but I also had to get a story in the can, as they speak, for the weekend when I wasn't working. So somebody had put a copy of Jessica Mitford's famous expose, The American Way of Death, on my desk. Some of your listeners may be familiar with that book that came out in 63. And I stayed up all night reading it. It was an absolute page-turner. It had never occurred to me that there could be so much complication and misrepresentation and expense associated with the funeral. I just hadn't given it any thought. And I decided that I wanted to do a story locally on what people should know about the funeral industry in the city that I covered. And when I figured out that most of the prominent funeral homes had been bought up by a large national corporation, I wanted to do a cost comparison for folks so they could see the difference in price between family-owned funeral homes and corporate funeral homes and what had happened over the years to those prices after the Wall Street takeover. And long story short, I was stymied at every turn by the state regulators, who I really believe were colluding with some of the prominent industry people to prevent me from getting that information out there in detail to the public. And it upset me enough, and I thought to myself, you know, if a reporter who knows his way around open government laws can't get this information to do a consumer story, what chance does Mrs. Smith have when she goes down to a funeral home with no knowledge about what she's facing?
Now, had you had personal experience with family members before this?
In terms of arranging a funeral, no. I mean, I've certainly been to funerals, but no, I hadn't ever been through the process myself.
Okay. And so this was your first attempt to sort of find out information about what it would cost and what's possible and who provides it.
Well, yeah, certainly. And it was, you know, the scales fell from my eyes rather quickly when I got in touch with the Funeral Consumers Alliance, which I now work for. You know, want to talk about the difficulty of understanding your options when you're in a calm frame of mind, right? I wasn't arranging anybody's funeral. I was trying to put together information, and the hoops that I had to jump through, and the misdirection and the unfamiliar terms, and my realization that I was absolutely ignorant of what a funeral could be, what my legal rights were, how much it ought to cost, some of the traps you can fall into. And if I didn't know any of these things, most of the rest of the public surely didn't either.
Now, when Jessica Mitford's book came out in the mid-60s, for people who haven't read that, tell people why it caused such a furor.
Oh, a furor, absolutely. If anybody hasn't read this book, run, don't walk to your public library.
So even though it's 35 years old, it's still relevant.
Even though it's 35 years old, exactly the same things are going on in the funeral industry as today. Shortly before her death, Jessica Mitford, who was a famous British expat and a famous muckraking journalist, published this book in 63. And shortly before her death, she revised The American Way of Death, which is The American Way of Death Revisited, published in 1998. So there is an update to the book, but it was astonishing how much had stayed the same. This was really one of the first clear dissections, if you will, of exactly what goes on in the funeral industry as an industry. We have a tendency to think I'll get to that perhaps a little bit later. Mitford went behind the curtain, and she explored some of the myths that are used to sell expensive caskets, the lack of necessity for what the industry calls its traditional funeral, complete with chemical embalming and makeup and public showings. And she really showed that the roots of what has become known as a traditional funeral in this country have absolutely no roots in American history, in any major religion. They really are a commercially created tradition that gelled together as the mortuary industry put itself together at the end of the 19th century. And the absolute, the extraordinary cost associated with all of this was something that that really got her dander up. And when she looked at what people were paying for funerals in this country versus what they were paying for in her native England, and the reasons why, I think that what really got the industry riled up in this book really was a sensation. It sold well over a million copies. CBS turned it into an hour-long documentary called The Great American Funeral. Of course, it threw the undertakers into apoplexy. And I think what bothered them was that Jessica Mitford stripped away the euphemisms and these sort of fake piety and fake sympathy that's used to disguise an incredibly lucrative transaction that you can really get fleeced on if you're not careful.
Now, when you talk about fake piety, fake sympathy, certainly some of these people who work in this industry are quite sincere.
Oh, absolutely. And I'll give my standard disclaimer, which will do absolutely nothing to immunize me from criticism from any of your listeners who may be in the business, but I do mean it. There are good, honest people in the funeral industry who do who make their living caring for the dead, and they are dedicated, caring people who really do want to make a difference. That said, however, the problems with the funeral industry do not come from a few bad apples. The problems are systemic, and they are embedded in the culture of the funeral industry, the economics of the industry. You have to remember, even those people who really care about their job, they really care about the way they run the funeral home, they care about the client families that they serve, all of that is absolutely true. But when I say fake piety, what I mean is we as Americans tend to forget that the funeral is an economic transaction. It has much more meaning than that, but it has been in many ways reduced to a purely economic transaction at the funeral home. And lo and behold, what is offered to us as people in grief in terms of, an appropriate ceremony or an honorable ceremony far too often correlates with the most expensive thing on the menu at the mortuary. And, I know a lot of people in the industry who really do believe their own publicity. They really do think that an elaborate funeral and the public showing of the body is not just an option, but something that everybody must have if they're going to deal with grief properly. I certainly don't think that's true. I think that people have different needs in funerals and ceremonies. It depends on the family. It depends on your religious background, your philosophical background, and a host of other things. So, you know, what I mean to say is people tend to treat funeral directors sometimes almost as clergy, right? They forget that this is how people make their living. There's nothing wrong or dishonorable or shameful about making your living caring for the dead. But we have to remember that this is not an altruistic endeavor. This is how a funeral director gets paid.
Is part of people's reluctance to talk about this and think about this fear of death? And secondly, do people feel nervous around funeral directors because, after all, they don't want to do it themselves?
Oh, sure. I call it, we Americans have an almost pathological fear of death and dying, and you can index that by how many euphemisms we use to avoid actually saying the word. People pass away, they move on, you lose a family member, anything but saying the word death. And, you know, I think a lot of that comes from the fact that in the 19th century, our illnesses and deaths usually took place in the home. It was a family affair. It was very common for the family to care for the dead loved one and carry out the funeral. Incidentally, this is also completely legal and possible today. Maybe we can talk about that a little later as an option. But yes, we're afraid of it. For a long time, death was moved out of the home and into the hospital. The increasing medicalization of death and illness and the rise of the mortuary industry has made death something that is unfamiliar to most of us. And the unfamiliar is scary, certainly.
We're talking on Keeping the Faith this afternoon with Joshua Slocum, who's the National Director of the Funeral Consumers Alliance, who will be speaking in Champaign-Urbana Monday, April 28th at 7 p.m. at Provena Covenant Hospital Auditorium. That's at 1400 West Park Street, just a half a block off of Wright Street between Champaign and Urbana. It's a free program, and he'll be talking about what you don't know can cost you, current trends in the funeral industry. There'll be a chance for questions and comments after that, as there are on this program. This is a live program, and let me give the phone numbers now and encourage listeners who have questions or comments to give us a call. In Champaign-Urbana, the number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL, the call letters of the station, of course. If you're listening where it's a long-distance call, use this number, 1-800-222-9455. So if it's a long-distance call, this is a toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. And that includes listeners on the Internet who are listening at will.illinois.edu. And that's a call you can make free anywhere in the continental U.S., toll-free. Josh, you talked about this is a systemic problem with the funeral industry. Why is that?
Well, for a couple of reasons. I mean, I talked a little bit before about how we moved from a society in which the family members and often the church would actually physically care for the dead and perform the funeral process into a society where we turn over our dead to a group of professionals for a fee. And a lot of us have forgotten. I mean, most people would be shocked to know that in all but a handful of states, and including Illinois, it is perfectly legal for you to care for your own dead at home and have what I think is a truly traditional funeral, which is a wake at home, something that the family participates in, either physically, emotionally, spiritually, however you want to talk about it. We have forgotten that we are capable of dealing with death, which is what else vexes us, right? As much as death, it's a mystery. It has profound meaning for people. It can be very hurtful, and you know, when we give up our power as citizens or consumers, which I think we have in this area, I think we've allowed the organized funeral industry to tell us what's right and proper, and to tell us how much that ought to cost. And when we don't act, We're not just mourners. We're not just people when we go to the funeral home. We are also consumers. And as crass as that may sound, it is a reality. And it's a reality that you'll see when you look at your bank balance after you've paid $7,000, $8,000, $9,000 for the average traditional funeral and cemetery burial.
Let me interrupt you. We have a caller waiting on our toll-free line, line number 4. You're on Keeping the Faith with our guest Joshua Slocum. Go ahead.
Yes. I had a question. I don't believe that your body and your soul have the same connection. And I wanted to know what you thought was the cheapest way of going about being buried. I'm an organ donor, so parts of it are going to go somewhere else. But
okay. So the question is about what's the least expensive way to deal with your body.
It doesn't have any relationship to my soul or anything else.
All right. So you think that after death, your soul is somewhere else, and
yes.
So you're concerned with just the cheapest way your family or friends could deal with a dead body.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's let our guest answer. Thanks very much for the question.
Good. It's a good question. Before I answer it directly, I do want to point out. Funeral Consumers Alliance is a non-sectarian, non-political nonprofit, so we offer practical advice to people from all walks of life. And I find that regardless of whether people are Christian, Jewish, atheist, Baha'i, Muslim, whatever it is, a lot of us have very, very common concerns about this thing. And most people that I talk to, no matter where they come from, express something similar, that they think that, you know, what makes life and us meaningful or special and valuable doesn't have to do with necessarily what we leave behind in our body. So I think it's a common concern. And the lady mentioned being an organ donor. One of the least expensive ways to actually dispose of the body, and I don't mean that to sound crass, but to actually facilitate the disposition of the body is through anatomical donation. That is not the same as organ donation. Live organ donation means that your kidneys or your heart or your liver are donated. That's great. I encourage people to be organ donors. Folks should know that that's not that's something that only about 2% of us will die in a condition where we can donate our organs. So and you still have to do something with what's left. Anatomical donation to a medical school where the body is taken for study by doctors, young doctors in training, to do surgical procedures and learn anatomy is a gift to science and humanity.
And can that be done in addition to organ donation?
Yeah. Well, not. You check with the medical school. Most medical schools, they want an intact body.
I see.
But check for details locally.
Right.
And I took a quick look, actually, before I came on here. The Funeral Consumers Alliance in Champaign-Urbana, where I'll be speaking, the local affiliate of the organization, has done a fantastic public service in putting together a price survey in the area of what these things cost. And I took some numbers out. And if you want to donate your body to the Anatomical Gift Association, which is in Chicago, funeral homes locally charge a range from $700 to what I think is an unconscionable $2,950. Certainly less expensive than the full-service funeral. Take a look at what the local funeral consumer volunteers found. A full-service funeral, which you may know as a traditional funeral with embalming and viewing, church service, and graveside, can go from $2,900 all the way up to $5,050. This is all, within the Champaign-Urbana area. Direct cremation, which is might answer the lady's question as well, next least expensive method. Simple cremation ranges from $1,300 to $2,600, depending on where you go. Simple burial, a direct burial with a modest casket, it's going to cost you anywhere from $1,000 to $2,800, depending on which local funeral home you choose. So this is kind of what I mean when I titled my talk, What You Don't Know Can Cost You. People don't often shop around for funerals, and I think that's a mistake because we can often find that what you want, whether you want a full-service funeral or you want something simpler, you want something in between, there's no percentage in there's no point, I don't think, in overpaying for what you want. Cost is not the only factor, but once you look at what your options are and what's meaningful for your family, why pay more than you have to?
Now, when you talk about a full-service funeral, does that include the burial in a cemetery?
No, this is very, very important. Most people tend to think of them together, obviously, but when I'm talking about funeral costs, I mean just funeral, right? I mean the services of the funeral home. The grave, the digging of the grave, any vault or cement liner that the cemetery may require, these are all additional expenses. So people often ask me, what's the cost of an average funeral? Well, I don't like giving. I'll tell you, I don't like giving it out because I think that there's a reason why the trade associations publish these. The more they tell you that $6,500 or $7,000, which is about where it is right now, the more they say this is the cost of an average funeral, the more you, the consumer, become convinced that that's reasonable, and I don't think it is. But let's say you pay $6,500 or $7,000, you can very easily add a couple thousand more in cemetery expenses.
How do poor families deal with this?
It's a good question.
To suddenly have a $9,000 or $10,000 bill that you have to pay.
Oh, absolutely, and it's not just poor families. I mean, I'll tell you right now, if I had a, you know, I think reasonably, you know, middle class in income, but I don't have $9,000 just sitting around. If my mother were to die tomorrow, now I wouldn't be inclined to pick that kind of expensive funeral. But if I wanted it, there's no way I could do it. I've heard all sorts of stories from people. They try to raise money from other family members. They might approach their church. Some people will, this really upsets me, will fall victim to these high-priced short-term loans with absolutely, you know, usurious interest rates to finance this funeral.
Let's talk about an alternative that might be reasonable for some people. Let's say someone doesn't want to do it themselves. They don't. Mm-hmm. They don't want to deal with the dead body of a loved one. They're too upset. They don't have any experience with it. So they mm-hmm. so they want.
I will say though, Steve, if we can get back to that, I think people would be surprised at what they can do. But what's another alternative?
Well, let me lay one out for you. Let's say someone wants someone else to deal with the body.
Mm-hmm.
They want a very simple casket.
Mm-hmm.
Their church will provide a place where they'll have a religious service.
Mm-hmm.
What's the minimum? What can be done so that everything is done in a dignified way, an appropriate way, but not an expensive way?
Okay. I'm glad you asked that because I believe that dignified and appropriate have nothing to do with the amount of money we spend. That's something for people of all walks of life to keep in their mind. What's meaningful about our relationships with our family members and our friends can't be expressed and can't be bought through the merchandise that we consume. So dignified and appropriate is for every family to decide on themselves. What can you do? Pick and choose carefully. There's a federal regulation called the funeral rule. The funeral rule. That gives you important rights when you go to the funeral home. You can pick and choose only the goods and services you want. Very few things are required by law, and you have the option of, let's say, starting with direct burial, which is a burial without ceremony. You can pick a modest casket. Let's say you want a little more than that. Well, you can add on. You can have the funeral home bring the body to the church. You can choose instead to have a memorial service or a religious service at a later date. One of the things that can really help, if we can separate, if the family is comfortable separating the physical disposition of the body from the memorial event, your options open up and your costs can be controlled. So if you can choose a simple burial or cremation, there's nothing to stop you from putting together a memorial service at church, at an art gallery, at the Veterans Hall, at any time later, and it can be as personal and in-depth as you want it to be.
When my father died, he had specified that he wished to be buried within 24 hours, which in this state at least doesn't require embalming. He wanted a very simple casket. We had a pall, a very nice cloth.
Mm-hmm.
Religious, with religious symbolism to put over the casket. The family went to the place where he had bought a cemetery plot years before, several mm-hmm. actually, and the family gathered for that privately, and we did have a funeral home where we bought the casket, and they brought the casket to the cemetery, and then we had mm-hmm. a memorial service in church later, and we thought
yep.
that was very appropriate.
Yep, I've heard many stories like that. One of the One of the most creative stories I heard was from a family who, you know, wanted to have a sir. I don't remember the gentleman's name. They had, I don't remember if it was burial or cremation, but they didn't have any, they didn't have ceremonies associated with the body present. But what they did do, they rented the art gallery on a Saturday afternoon. This was an art gallery that this gentleman had patronized in life. He'd supported it. He'd worked for it in the community. And they rented that art gallery, and they had a fantastic memorial service in this place. And it, you know, for him, it could not have been a more appropriate venue. I mean, this was a place he loved, that he cared about, that he donated his time and his money to.
What other places have you heard for non-religious people, people who don't have a church, a synagogue, a mosque, or there might be a memorial service?
Oh, just about anywhere. One of the interesting things is, you can have a memorial service at the funeral home, absolutely. But take a look at the cost of that versus, you know, what you might be able to do somewhere else. I've seen funeral homes that'll charge, you know, $600 or $700 for a couple hours to perform a memorial service there, in addition to everything else. In a lot of towns, you can rent a lovely half banquet room at the Sheraton for half that price for the whole day. Veterans halls, foreign legion halls, if the person was a veteran, will often be the site of a funeral. I've heard of people having funerals thrown at discotheques they used to go to, just about anywhere. I've heard of them in libraries.
In good weather, outside at a park?
Why not? I mean, look. What's most common about funerals, right? I mean, all. Cultures, religions, philosophical backgrounds all have different ceremonies associated with it. But in most cases, what's important to people, what they get out of it, is the sense of community support.
We have another caller waiting. Josh, mm-hmm. Let me go again to line number 4. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith with our guest Joshua Slocum from the Funeral Consumers Alliance. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I've got a couple of comments, and then I've got a question. I've agree with you totally about the funeral industry, and I use the word industry, and not in a pejorative way, it's just the way it is. I read Jessica Medford's book back in the, I think it was 64, about a few months before my father passed away, and so I was well aware of what was going on. And yet the irony of it is when I went, escorted my mother to the funeral home to pick out, you know, the casket and make the arrangements. Of course, she didn't want to do anything like that before. Two things struck me. First of all, when we were looking at caskets, I looked inside the casket, and there was a mattress with a posture... Sealy Posturepedic stripe across it. And I said to the funeral director, I said, what does that do? He said, well, it helps us to arrange the body. And I said, well, it certainly won't make it any more comfortable.
Yes.
And then when it came to the situation of the vault, as you speak, which you... it. Is inclusive in the whole funeral thing. You know, it's not, you know, separate. You have to have one.
Some states require them, or only certain cemeteries require
yes.
them?
Yes, yeah.
Yes,
and,
that's
and
right. No state law requires them. That okay. is correct.
Right. And so anyway, the thing is that when we were filling out the information and such, they gave me this warranty for the vault for 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, what happens if something goes wrong and it leaks? I said, do you replace the body or what? So anyway, that set me up with them for good stead. Go on to 20-some years later, my mother passes away, and she died at home. Her instructions were that she was to have the funeral in the house. They hadn't had a funeral in this town in something like 35 years in the home. And we had people coming out of curiosity,
mm-hmm.
you know, just to see it. And so I had to put up a guest list and say, that's it. If you're not on the guest list, you don't come to the funeral. But anyway, I got off to a bad start with the father of the son of the father of the funeral director. And he, when I went over to the funeral home, I had already set up everything with the father, who was retired, because my mother wouldn't talk to the son. And she had him come into her bedside in her home. And she died in the room that she was born in. You know, that's the way she wanted it. But anyway, I walked in, and he looked at me, and he says, you look like a bad embalming job. Oh, yeah, yeah. And so anyway, I went on and I said, I want an itemized list.
Mm-hmm. Which you're entitled to. Which you're entitled to.
That embalming only costs $69.
Well, that certainly isn't true anymore.
Well, but in the inclusive all the price, it cost you $500 to have the viewing and the funeral at the funeral home.
Mm-hmm. This is important. What you're bringing up is important because it leads to a couple of simple steps people can take to make sure that they don't get misled or overly sold to. You mentioned an itemized list. This is important for everybody. Remember, when you go to a funeral home, the Federal Trade Commission requires funeral homes to give you an itemized price list. Think about it as like a menu at the mortuary, right? It's everything they sell, all their different services, all their different merchandise, item by item. They can offer you a package, but you don't have to accept that. So if there are things in there that you don't want, say,
that's
for example...
Right.
But this, for the benefit of the other listeners, it's very important to get that price list at the beginning of the funeral arrangements discussion, because that is what will help you control costs and what options you have.
And you don't have to get that from only one funeral home. You can go to a couple.
Absolutely.
In a small town, you're limited in your...
Well, that is a problem in small towns.
Let me clarify, please.
Yes.
You aren't as limited as you think. This is a common misconception that people have. Most consumer surveys show that most people pick a funeral home, A, because they've used it before, or
right.
B, because it's close to their home.
Right.
Neither of those is a very good method of deciding whether the cost is also appropriate. If, for example, you don't need to use the funeral home as a focal point for a physical gathering, if you're having a service later and you're going to have a simple burial or cremation, you don't need to go to the funeral home right in your small town. If the funeral home 30 miles away or even 45 miles away is charging half the price for that simple service, it certainly pays to let your fingers do the walking in the yellow pages and call somebody who's a little more distant. Obviously, if folks are going to be traveling to come to a funeral home for a ceremony, its location will be more important.
Quickly mention that here in central Illinois, although the Champaign-Urbana chapter of the Funeral Consumers Alliance is here in Champaign-Urbana, we have a website, and people from farther away can just go to our website and see what the prices are here, and we include some small towns near here, so that would give you some options if you're anywhere near Champaign-Urbana, and it would give you some comparisons that you could make even if you're much farther away as you negotiate this, because it is a business arrangement when it comes to how much you're going to pay. So you can negotiate. They won't tell you this often, but they can.
Now, what was the site for that again?
Well, I think the easiest way, Steve, probably, because the link is very long.
It is.
I think the easiest way for you to find the Champaign-Urbana group would be to go through our national website, which is www.funerals.org. That's funerals with an S, .org.
Okay.
Once you get there, you'll see a button that lets you look for a local chapter.
Okay. All right.
You had a question, sir. Go ahead.
And to lead up to it, when I was signing the papers, I said, well, this will be the last one that I will ever do. He said, why is that? And I said, well, because I don't plan on having anything like this. I said, I'm going to either donate my body to science, which I will tell you is a problem. There are overstocked bodies at the present time in certain medical schools.
Most have a great need, however. Most don't have enough.
When I did some research for mine, I found that was a problem. Also, so the thing is that I said I wish to either be cremated or green burial. And he says, well, don't you have any respect for your body? And I said, I said, I don't know whether I've had much respect for it while I'm alive. Why do I need to worry about it later? So the situation is, I have not been able to find anything in the Midwest dealing with green burial, because that's the most simple way of going with it. The local cemetery, where we have the family cemetery, will not allow green burial.
Let's back up for a second. Tell me what it is that they won't allow specifically. Many of the listeners may not be familiar with the term green burial.
Well, they want it embalmed, and they want it put into a casket, and they want it put into a vault.
Okay, let's let our guest respond to that, and thank you very much for your call and your comments and questions. We appreciate it. Go ahead, Josh. How would you respond to these kind of issues?
Well, first of all, green burial is, let me define that for folks that haven't heard of it. In its simplest form, it really means a traditional form of burial, no embalming, no coffin or a biodegradable wood or cardboard casket, and no outer enclosure, no outer vault or concrete liner to surround the body in the grave.
Okay, I misunderstood. Did you say no?
No
cardboard,
embalming.
No wooden casket? Or
no, I'm sorry. I didn't know. No. Either no coffin, or if you do have a coffin, one that's made of wood or cardboard that can easily biodegrade.
I see. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Green burial has been getting a lot of attention. There are a handful of cemeteries around the country that specialize in it. We're starting off slow, but the movement is picking up steam. And many of these places, they leave the grounds in a natural state. They're more like a park than a manicured cemetery, in a place where natural species can stay there, birds can stay there, the plants are left in their natural state. This is not, contrary to popular belief, some sort of environmental chic radical new idea. It really is a return to traditional forms of burial. As a matter of fact, if you go to Middle Eastern countries, both Israel and in Muslim countries, shroud-only burial is still the preferred method of burial.
And I believe that when we had our speaker at this annual meeting here in Champaign-Urbana last year, we had two speakers who have themselves a green cemetery in South Carolina. I believe that when we researched that after their visit and their talk a year ago, that I think it's St. Mary's Cemetery locally in Champaign-Urbana that does allow green burial right now.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Even if there isn't a green cemetery, you can take steps in a conventional cemetery to be greener. Number one, pick what's called an alternative container instead of a casket. It's a heavy fiberboard or cardboard box that's usually used to transport the body before cremation, but there's absolutely nothing that says that you can't be buried in it. There are no, let me make this very clear, there are no laws in any state in the country that require a casket or require a vault. If anyone tells you that, they don't know what they're talking about.
But cemeteries...
Some cemeteries may require a vault. If you want to do the least expensive and the greenest, pick what's called a concrete grave liner, which has sides and a top but no bottom and lets the body go in contact with the earth.
We have another caller waiting on line number one. Before I go to that, let me remind people we're talking by phone to Joshua Slocum in Vermont. He's the National Director of the Funeral Consumers Alliance. He'll be speaking here in Champaign-Urbana on Monday, April 28 at 7 p.m. at Provena Covenant Hospital Auditorium. That's right on the first floor. That's at 1400 West Park Street in Urbana, very close to Wright Street, which divides Champaign and Urbana. There's plenty of free parking there. It's a free program. You can hear him talk. You can ask him questions. Let's go to line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith.
Hi, Steve. I didn't listen to the whole program, so you might have dealt with this early. I just tuned in recently. But I wanted to bring up two different things from two different traditions. You were just talking about vaults and all the rest. In the Orthodox Jewish tradition, which you're probably familiar with, the burial in a simple pine box, and there's a hole made in the box. It's one of the requirements is that it comes into contact with the earth. So, and then you have the natural decomposition. So I know for sure that, that occurs in many cemeteries in the country without any need for a vault, et cetera, et cetera. So that's certainly legal. But I wanted to bring up another issue from a different perspective, which is the issue in dealing with cremation. In some traditions, such as, let's say, the Buddhist tradition, the tradition is to actually partake in the cremation or be there as the body is going into the crematorium and conduct the service in that fashion. And it's difficult in many parts of the country and the Midwest because many crematoriums don't want to allow that. They want to have that separate from wherever you do whatever other service you do. So I'd be interested to hear what your guest and what you have to say about that. I know that's even an issue here in the Champaign area in some of the crematoriums.
Thank you for your call.
You're welcome.
Josh, response?
Yeah, very good points. You're absolutely right in terms of describing the Jewish burial practice, which, aside from some religious differences, is very, very close to the traditional Muslim practice as well of burying the body. And in fact, I think really one of the only reasons why, you know, why you might hear about drilling holes in the bottom of the coffin, if I know this correctly, there isn't even a coffin required there. It's sort of an accommodation to modern American sensibilities about burial. So, you know, it would certainly be in, just as in keeping with that religious tradition to bury the body shroud only, I believe. In
that
terms
a shroud
of,
is?
I'm sorry?
A shroud is?
I guess a fancy word for a piece of cloth.
All right.
Yep. cremation, that's also interesting. You talk about not being allowed to be there to witness it or participate in the process. There are some funeral homes that are changing that, which I really encourage, because people do want to be involved in the process. Not everybody, but a lot of people, just the guy next door to our office, a psychologist, came over the other day to my office and brought me pictures. His mother had just died, and I helped him do some funeral planning, and he brought me pictures of the crematorium and the family members actually helping to get the coffin, his mother's coffin, to the crematory retort. And it was very meaningful for him, and they stayed there the whole time. A lot of sort of old-school funeral homes, they like to shut it up in the back room, or, you know, the crematoriums are in industrial areas or in a garage. And part of the reason for that is cremation has been treated by the industry as the redheaded stepchild. For a long, long time, the industry used to disparage people who chose cremation, like the
but
prior
But many
caller.
More people are choosing it these days than
anymore.
Ever before.
And I think we need to...
Do you know percentages?
Yes. Nationally, it's about 30 or 32% of all deaths end in cremation. If you go to some states like Hawaii and Washington, the rate of cremation approaches 70%. So it's no longer, so in some places, cremation itself is the tradition. And England has done a much better job of accommodating families in that. Their retorts are not industrial. They're part of the chapel or the service room. They're not, you know, these aluminum sided monstrosities. They're in a lot of the English crematoriums. You can have chairs in the round around the ramp that brings the coffin into the crematory. You can have the service right there. There's nothing hidden about it. There's nothing gruesome. It's all right out in the open in a comfortable setting. And I think that it would be really wise for American funeral homes to follow that lead as more people choose it.
Let's go back to an issue you raised right at the start of this program when we started describing Jessica Mitford's book, The American Way of Death. You talked about the corporatization of the funeral industry that happened during the middle of the last century. Tell us the difference between family funeral homes and the corporate funeral homes.
Okay. starting in the, I think really in the 70s, but really took off in the 80s, where a number of companies formed, publicly traded companies, meaning that, that they're Wall Street companies, that formed chains of funeral homes and cemeteries, you know, sort of like the McDonald's of the funeral industry, except they don't pass the value along to the consumer. Let me say this. Just because a funeral home is owned by a chain corporation or because it's owned by an independent owner is no guarantee that it's a good place or a bad place. I've seen good happen in both. And just because a funeral home is family-owned doesn't mean that that everything's on the up and up. So in general, however, what we have found is the larger chains of funeral homes like Service Corporation International, that goes by the brand name Dignity Memorial, tend to be very, very high priced, much higher priced than the average independent funeral home. And we get a lot of complaints from bereaved families that the sales techniques are particularly aggressive at corporate funeral homes. And we don't like to think of sales in funeral service, but really what would you call it when you go into a funeral home and you want to make arrangements and you've got somebody across the desk who says, well, wouldn't you like an appropriate tribute for your mother? Shouldn't there be time for people to come and pay her respects to the body? And as you're saying yes to all this because you're being spoken to in these soothing, ostensibly caring tones of voice, your bill is getting higher and higher and higher and higher.
One problem we found as in our family when my father died was that even though I, as a pastor, had tried to be helpful to many families going through this process, when we actually got to the funeral home and asked for a very plain, simple, wooden, not ornate casket, which is what my father wanted, they said, oh, we can order one, but it'll take 3 days to get here. And my father had also asked to be buried within 24 hours and not be embalmed. So we ended up paying considerably more than we would have hoped.
Yeah, it's a common problem. I mean, you know, I think a lot of people have heard the stories about the, and unfortunately, sometimes they're true. You go into the casket showroom, and the expensive caskets are on velvet-covered biers, and there's track lighting to make them look, you know, particularly fetching. And if you ask to see the least expensive casket, sometimes you're taken to a back room, where, and sometimes the least expensive casket, they're deliberately manufactured by the companies to look ugly. As one said, if we made them look good, too many people would buy them. There are other options out there.
Like a pall, P-A-L-L.
I'm sorry?
Like a pall, P-A-L-L, to cover a casket with.
Absolutely.
Piece of cloth, yeah.
Certainly. Steve, you know more about this than I do, but I believe the Episcopal Church uses a pall, and I think the justification for that, if I'm correct about it, and if I'm not, it should be, the cloth covers the casket so that everybody is equal in death.
Sure.
The rich person or the poor person, this is not a time for showing off your finery and showing off to everybody how much you spent on grandma's casket. It's a time to reflect on humanity.
And in the case of the Episcopal Church, each church would provide that pall for everyone.
Good.
The same one.
And anybody can do this. I mean, you know, there's lots of creative ways to...
A quilt would be wonderful.
Absolutely. Yeah. A quilt cover, an American flag, any attractive piece of cloth, absolutely. People can make their own caskets, too. And a lot of people say, well, what am I going to do with that until I die? Well, let's think about it. It's a rectangular box about 6 feet long and a couple of feet wide and a couple of feet deep. It's not a casket until a body goes in it. Maybe it's a linen chest. Maybe it's a wine rack.
A bookcase.
I'm serious.
A bookcase.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, up here in New England, I know a couple of, they wouldn't mind me describing them as self-sufficient old Yankee codgers who've got their wood coffins stored up in the attic because nobody's going to take advantage of me when I go. So there's lots of ways to approach this.
We're nearing the end of our program. Let me reintroduce our guest, Joshua Slocum. We've been talking with the National Director of the Funeral Consumers Alliance. We've been talking with him by phone from Vermont. But he'll be talking about what you don't know can cost you, current trends in the funeral industry, live in person here in Champaign-Urbana on the 28th of April. That's a Monday night at 7 p.m. at Provena Covenant Hospital, 1400 West Park Street, Champaign. It's a free program. If you'd like to come and learn more about this, ask questions, meet some of the local folks who volunteer locally to find out information about the local funeral options and cemetery options. And we have online information, and we also pass out annually, we mail out a brochure giving you up-to-date costs for all these various things from the various cemeteries and funeral homes in this area. So you can find that information by going to funerals.org, and then looking for Champaign, Illinois, or Urbana, Illinois, and you'll find the local information website. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. I'm also the director for another few months of the University YMCA. And let me just mention that the Y is having a little retirement due for me this Thursday at 4 at the University Y. And we've tried to get the word out to folks who might like to attend that. But particularly if there are couples whose weddings I performed, I'd love to see you again before I slip off into the retirement life. So if you're free between 4 and 6 this coming Thursday at the University Y, do come to 1001 South Wright Street. It might help us with refreshments if you gave us a call beforehand. The number is 217-337-1500. That's 217-337-1500. Also coming up at the Y this spring is our annual collection for Dump and Run. Students particularly, but anybody else in the community who has furniture, boy, donate some furniture to us, because next fall we'll have this wonderful Dump and Run sale where all the stuff we collect in the spring we offer to incoming students who are setting up apartments and dorm rooms, and particularly international students find this very helpful. So starting in May, it's exam week, but it starts May 12. We'll be collecting for Dump and Run. I'm sorry, May 5th is when we start. We'll continue May 12, the week of May 12. Bring things to University Y. If you need help getting it there, give us a call, the same number I mentioned earlier, 337-1500. So we also take household goods, clothes, books, all kinds of stuff, anything students and others might want. We collect it. It helps make money for the Y, give people great bargains, and it keeps things out of the waste stream. Well, that's the announcements about the Y, and the Y does provide support for these Keeping the Faith programs that are on weekly. Next week on Keeping the Faith, I'll be talking with Norman Hubbard of the Navigators organization here at the University of Illinois campus on April 27th. Our guest will be a panelist from three different religious traditions: Elihu Smith from the Zen Buddhist tradition, Rabbi Norman Klein from Sinai Temple Jewish tradition, Tracy Howman and Mike Mulberry, who are ordained ministers who serve Community United Church of Christ, a Protestant Christian organization. They'll be talking about the Big Read Project of Tolstoy. This is a big week for Big Read. Go online and check out the Death of Ivan Illich Big Read Project here in Champaign-Urbana. I'm afraid we're out of time. Thank you very much to our guest. Thanks for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Imagine the world as we know it, only without us. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time, under the best of our knowledge, a writer imagines a world reinventing itself without human beings. He sees the New York subway system returning to its watery origins, the reabsorption of carbon into the earth, and endangered wildlife coming back from the brink. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 on WILL Urbana. Hi, I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser, inviting you to tune in to Your Weather tonight at 9:58 on WILL-TV. We've expanded the weather coverage to 7 nights a week. Now you can join us every night at 9:58 on WILL-TV, PBS for Central Illinois.
AM 580 has a listener comment line. If you'd like to comment on something you hear on the Information Advantage, call 217-333-0853 and leave a message. That's 217-333-0853.
Support for today's broadcast comes from 40 North 88 West, presenting the 6th Annual Boneyard Arts Festival, April 18th through 20th. With venues throughout the county, the festival features music, dance,